Hey, everybody. Happy St. Paddy's Day today, March 17th, 2022. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. We have a good show for you right now. We're going to be talking about advocating for superintendents of color. And to help me with that show, I've got my own personal Hurricane Maria, Dr. Maria Armstrong, who's the executive director of ALAS, the Association of Latino Administrators and Superintendents, one of my favorite guests. And also she has brought with her James Guerra. James is the CEO, founder of JG Consulting, which is an administrative search firm in education. And we're going to talk about the need for superintendents of color, especially in these days of superintendent shortage, the need for solid leadership that reflects what the kids are like these days, etc. So it's going to be a really good show. All right, I'm really looking forward to it. We're going to archive it over at ace-ed.org. That's ace-ed.org. Home website of our Equity and Access work, our Consortium for Equity in Education. Our online journal, Equity and Access, is over there. You can click on the cover and read a wonderful issue. Great articles over there. All our podcasts are there, as well as a link to our new website, which is called seltoday.org. All right, all about social emotional learning. Obviously, we're working on that very carefully. And also, check out our new website on professional learning in terms of teacher retention. You can link from ace-ed.org or go to teacher-retention.com. All right, and we're very concerned about that, okay, these days, and I'm sure we'll have a conversation about that with, we'll include that in our conversation with Maria and James today. So check out everything we do at ace-ed.org. Everything's linked over there. And let me bring on my two wonderful guests. It's circling. There we go. Hurricane Maria, my dear friend. How are you, Maria Armstrong?
I'm so happy to be here with you, Larry. It's been a minute. So, I'm just excited to be able to connect with you, my friend.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. It's wonderful to have you here. And you are the good Hurricane Maria. Okay, the good one. You come in and get things done. Don't take no for an answer. Okay, that's all I can say about that.
I didn't know there was a good and hurricane. I do know a good and
there
a bad
is.
Witch, but
No, it's a good hurricane. You're not a good hurricane, Maria. Actually, I found that out. You worked on the recovery effort, okay, in Puerto Rico.
I
didn't know that for the hurricane, Maria stuff. How's things going? Are you in touch with the folks? How's things going over there?
Absolutely. Actually, I just returned I guess it was Monday. I returned from Puerto Rico working on, you know, we're going to be holding our 19th annual national summit for ALAS in Puerto Rico. So been working with the Department of Ed out there.
Wow.
Some folks lined up. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so we're super excited.
Wow.
But I'll have to come back on another show to talk to you all about that.
When will that be? When will that be? You're always welcome here. But when will that be?
The summit is the first week of October. Yep, this year is October.
I'm making a note
4th.
Of it right now. We're going to schedule that in very soon today. Okay.
Beautiful. Till the 7th.
All right. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I will let that be. We'll talk before that. Okay, in terms of having another show before that, but I want to make sure that's covered. Okay, I may even go down there. That would be fun.
We would love to have you. I think you should do a live podcast from Puerto Rico.
If we would do one there. It would be great. Okay, I really look forward to
awesome.
That. This would be really neat. Okay, what fun. Okay, first week of October down in Puerto Rico, everybody, okay, for ALAS' annual conference. Okay, that's great. That's ALAS.
And
ALAS.edu. I know.
Everyone within earshot is invited. Absolutely. We would love to be able to host and share everything that our amazing members and friends and partners and sponsors are all doing for, you know, at the end of the day for our kids. So, we invite all.
Absolutely. And I gave the wrong website. I knew something was wrong when I said it's alasedu.org. Alas, alasedu.org. Okay. Yeah, that's great. James, I didn't mean to leave you off in the lurch there. How are you, my new friend? James Guerra, everybody.
Hi. I'm great. Thank you for the invitation to join and to be here to carry Hurricane Maria's bag this morning. It's nice to meet you, albeit on the phone.
I'll tell you, she comes in, she gets things done. That's my Hurricane Maria Armstrong, I got to tell you. All right. James, you're down in Dallas. Tell us about your firm, which is called JG. That's your initials, by the way. JG Consulting. But go ahead, talk about. Tell us, first of all, how you don't like the Cowboys. You're really an Eagles fan like I am. And then you go into what your company does.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'm based in Austin, Texas.
There you go. All right. Then you're forgiven. Okay.
It's a bit misleading. Well, Larry, in full disclosure, and to be candid with you, because I don't tell a lie, I am a Dallas Cowboys fan. I'm actually a season ticket holder.
And it's been really nice to have you here on the show today, James. You take care. It's been a pleasure. I'm only kidding.
Hey, it's hard. It's a hard knock life being a Cowboys fan.
Yeah, I know it's fun,
but thank you for the opportunity to join you this morning. Just briefly, from a very very high level, my firm is a full service consultancy. What many folks know about us in this respective field is that we're an executive search firm. We recruit executive talent at all levels, from the principalship up to central office, to the superintendent, state-level agencies, and most recently we've diversified a bit into other government municipalities by way of recruiting city managers. But predominantly focused in public education nationwide, so East Coast to West Coast. I have 36 retired educators, predominantly superintendents, who have a successful track record, or track records, if you will, scattered about the country. We are Texas-based, but we work around the United States serving public education.
And it's JG Consulting, everybody. And I'll just ask you, James, before we go any further, give me the temperature out there in terms of superintendent search or educational searches in that regard. What's the temperature you're finding?
Yeah, so it feels like in the past year and a half, 2 years arguably, we've seen an uptick in a trend of early retirements, resignations, terminations.
Yeah.
I think a culmination of all of the above, which is creating a mass exodus of superintendents. Wow, which on the flip side of the coin, I think the upside is those who are compelled to serve at that level, aspiring superintendents, I think it's a ripe opportunity for them.
I agree.
Step into that role. So I think it's a bit of a catch-22. I think we're starting to see some folks age out. I think there's an opportunity for rising talent to ascend to that level. So I think there's the good and there's the bad, of course. But I think this change is inevitable, and it's just something to be expected.
I agree with you, and we have to look on it. If I may, and I don't want to see good people with experience leave. Nobody particularly wants to see that, okay? But by the same token, maybe it's time to move on to a new generation, all right? And we've always been talking about the lack of diversity, all right, within the superintendency, okay? And a lot, and nothing wrong with this because I'm one of them, we're white guys. Okay, but the students that we teach nationwide are much more diverse than that. And not that people like me aren't caring about that. Okay, you need a little bit of actual relationship to the cultures that we're teaching, and hence this might be a good opportunity to bring in more diversity into the superintendencies. And Maria, that's a great segue for you to go talk about that. In terms of women coming in terms of Latinos coming in terms of people of color coming in. Go ahead. Maria.
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
I can.
So, it's interesting, first of all, how we talk about diversity, and yet the women and folks of color, particularly Latinos, are the majority. And it's just interesting to me that we're finally looking at this position of not just change, perhaps just evolution in and of itself. So I think about how, it's more than just a leadership pipeline or a teacher to, superintendent pipeline. It's student to teacher to superintendent pipeline. It really starts at such a younger age, like you said, to be able to grow upward, if you will, the folks that will eventually get into the seat. And I say that because even though we're at a time where there's immense opportunity for those who have even considered the superintendency, it can be very overwhelming for some if they don't feel prepared. And so being prepared on that seat, you can see from the sidelines, I could do that job. If that's the kind of superintendent, if that's all it takes, well, I could do that job. I mean, we all hear that. Same thing about, our teachers. People think, I could teach. But until you get into the arena, you really have no idea. So that support and that preparation, and I'm not talking about just book study preparation. I'm talking about having, gone through the rank and file, if you will, of experience to be able to at least be exposed to some of the issues that often come with that position. And so having a shortage already going into, like James said, in the past 2 years, we've just seen them take early retirement. Or you have even said, I'm just going to take a break. Like, I can always come back and do something when things settle down. And when we talk about we'll talk a little bit more about when things, quote, settle down. But I think it's very, it's a juxtaposition, right? Chaos and crisis, and there's some opportunity in that. And there's also, there's also some melancholy for some folks where it's like, where are the good old days? Well, to be quite frank, we've been saying the good old days were for some, a very small sum, and maybe not for most.
That's right. That's right. And by the way, James, Maria called you Jim. Do you like James or Jim?
I go by James.
Jim, thank you. I said James.
No, James.
Yep. You like James? You like James?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
There you go. Thank you. I thought she said Jim, and I just wanted to make sure I was calling you something you felt comfortable with. Okay? So
no, if I called him Jim.
I thought
Jim
you did. You might not have, but that's what I thought I heard. That's why I was double-checking on that one. Okay? This is you bring up an interesting challenge here. Okay? We'd love to have more superintendents of diversity, but in order to do that, we have to have people moving up the administrative pipeline, if I may, starting as teachers who are diverse in their nature, okay? Be they, I'll just say people of color or gender, females, all right? So let me ask the executive search person, okay? James, talk to me. Do we have a pipeline of these folks?
We do, absolutely. So I can tell you statistically, of the last 22 superintendent searches that we've supported across the country, 73% who have been hired by our school board partners are people of color. 45% of that same number are women. So the men do have a slight edge, but we are starting to see an uptick. And even in some of the largest, most complex organizations in the country, some of the largest school systems that is in terms of the student enrollment, we're starting to see first-time neophyte superintendents. I'll give you a recent example. Here in my hometown, Austin Independent School District, which is an alma mater of mine, hired Dr. Stephanie Elizalde to serve as superintendent. Not only was she a neophyte, she was prior to her current role serving as a deputy superintendent in the Dallas Independent School District under the leadership of Dr. Michael Hinojosa. Stephanie was also the first ever Latina superintendent in Austin ISD 100-plus year history. And so I can go on with other stories or references similar to Dr. Elizalde's experience and her role here in Austin ISD. But I think, again, going back to my earlier comment, I think the ecosystem of which we work in is ripe for change. And I think our school board partners, if they're willing to be bold and brave, if I may say that, and not necessarily taking the chance, but understanding that those individuals that they interview are qualified. If their skill set and experience is aligned to the leadership profile, then I would encourage any candidate who feels compelled to apply for the job. And I'll use a baseball analogy. You can't get a hit unless you step in the batter's box. You have to take some cuts. And so if you're out there and you're listening to this podcast and you're an aspiring superintendent, if you look at that leadership profile and your skills align to the North Star, by all means, submit an application, whether it's with us, one of our counterparts in the executive search space.
Right.
The time is now, and I think we're starving for great talent because the tip of the spear is the school board and the superintendent.
I love what you said, but something you said, if I may, the fact disturbed me, okay, that when school districts would think about hiring someone of color or a female, they're taking a brave step. All right, you said that, and I know the way you meant it, and I'm saddened in a way that there would even be that consideration, that we would kind of start by saying, well, is this person qualified because they are a woman? Is this person qualified because they are a person of color? Okay, that shouldn't even enter into this. Okay, if I may, of course, obviously they're qualified. And I was just kind of, thought about, Maria, has there been any discrimination or kickback or whatever about people of color becoming superintendents? Have you heard anything?
So the bravery remark was more aligned to the willingness to invite a new superintendent, a neophyte is the word that I use, somebody who is aspiring to serve in the role for the first time. So not necessarily with respect to color or gender, but more about the ability of the job. Yeah, so not anything related to gender or race.
Yeah, because the way I heard it, okay, was just a little bit thing. And by the way, people have to start somewhere, okay? You just mentioned the Austin superintendent was a deputy superintendent. Okay, in Dallas, that qualifies her to move up. Okay, and I don't know her, but I'm sure she's wonderful at it. But let me get back to the other question. Have you heard anything, people saying bad things about people of color becoming superintendents, Maria? Wow, has that happened?
The thing is, here's the catch-all, scapegoat, whatever you want to call it. You know, oftentimes, and it's so blasé when used, just not the right fit. And I'm sure James can attest to that. We hear it all the time, just not the right fit. And that is a catch-all. And depending upon what the pool looks like, having been on the other side of things too, it's like depending upon the pool, you got to wonder, right? And so it's very, that's why it's very prudent that search firms such as James, when they take the resumes, if you will, to the school boards, that they are, not only prepared but qualified. So then when people say, they're just not the right fit, well, what does that mean? And
yeah,
so
exactly.
We've had even superintendents, and we have superintendents that have been in the seat for, 5+ years, and then all of a sudden it's like, they're just not the right fit. So to answer your question, see it. It's been a tough, particularly the last 2 years, because every nook and cranny has been filled with someone's agenda, and it comes out in so many different ways, all the way to creating. Made-up stories and character assassination and all of that to try to get rid of, to get rid of superintendents. And then once they go through all of the investigative processes, and that can take up to 2 years in and of itself, they find out that, it wasn't even an issue of the superintendent. But then their character has been assassinated, they're not looking, they're not even wanting to go into the superintendency, and if they are, then it's, quote, it's not a clean record. You don't have a, quote, clean record. And so, there's
like
just so many nuances. Yeah. And it's like, even if you've been exonerated, even, and so there's just so much shade of gray. in that, that, you know, we to answer your question, does it exist? Yes, it still exists. But until we talk about it, as clumsy as the conversations may be, we've got to be able to bring it out to light and have these conversations to be able to say, okay, what can we do better now that we know this?
Well said. It's sad that it even comes up like this. It just saddens me at this day and age. Okay, but it shouldn't be surprising. But it just makes me sad. What are you doing about that? You're Alas. What are you doing about that, Maria? You got to figure out something. Yeah. There's a problem.
You know,
let's fix it.
Exactly. So one of the things that we do is we encourage our members to reach out to us whenever they feel like there's something, you know, something afoot, right? And so we have, you know, written letters on behalf of the board expressing our concern when we start to see the number of superintendents of color drop in a state. We you know, I most recently sent out a statement, not just to our members, so that they know that they are being supported, that we are listening to them, but that we need to, you know, we need to coalesce to be able to come to some solutions about how to act on this. But I've also, you know, I sent it to the Department of Ed, to our White House advisors that we work with when it comes to education. And let them, just to make sure that they're, you know, everybody understands that this is an issue, where there are not enough of superintendents of color in these positions, which they are highly qualified for.
They are,
even as first year ones, as James, you know, shared, but also that even those that are in these seats that have a proven, quote, clean track record. But then all of a sudden something comes up, and then, you know, they're scarred, if you will. And I don't mean just from a professional sense. This has a very deep and disturbing toll, not just on that person that it's happening to, but also on their families. I mean, we've had superintendents where, you know, we've had superintendents, because of the climate that we're in right now, they literally have bodyguards that take them to and from work because it's just so volatile. So we want to make sure that as an organization, we want to hear these stories so that we can address them. And we've got standing committees, where they are looking into these issues about how do we bring to light, how do we change the systems that we work in, right, so that we are seeing this start to be eradicated. And don't get me wrong, there's going to be always, you know, we're not going to stand up for someone who is doing things, you know, wrong. But we're talking about the ones that are humming along, and because either they're pushing for greatness, or they they're making some kind of significant change, and it didn't pass mustard with, you know, a handful of people, so now they're, you know, irate, and then it's out. So it's like, how do we change these systems that we work in so that we are supported and provided, you know, this level of immediacy that we're seeking to be able to do right by, at the end of the day, the decisions are to do right by kids. How do we keep that at the forefront and not let the egos and the personalities and the differences of opinions, you got to work through that stuff. And people aren't willing to put in the work. And so how do we change that? You know, so it's a big one. It's a heavy lift.
It's a big issue.
But we're not afraid of heavy lifts. We're not afraid of heavy lifts.
Like I said, Hurricane Maria at your service. I mean, you'll take care of this. You're not afraid of a heavy lift at all. You know, it brings up some interesting questions. James, are you finding that there's enough candidates out there? I mean, everybody saw what was going on in school boards with masks, you know, the critical race theory. You go right down the list. Everybody's screaming and yelling at each other. We all saw it on the news. All right. What are you finding as you go out and search for candidates? And how are you, if I may, vetting them to work in such a crazed media circus in such a public job these days? James.
Yeah, Yeah, I think it's a wonderful question or set of questions. Thank you, Larry. Well, first, again, going back to the statement about it being a mass exodus, with that is the correlation of number of vacancies and opportunities available to aspiring superintendents or other sitting superintendents who are open to a transition or a move. So I think just in the state of Texas alone, where I live, there's more than 70 superintendent vacancies currently open for public consumption right now.
How many ISDs are there?
So we have 1,100. Majority of them are small rural districts. But if you look at the landscape of large urban superintendent vacancies, we're currently managing one of those, San Antonio Independent School District. We're being considered next week, a little more than a week from now to interview with the Fort Worth Independent School District.
Oh, wow.
So
wow.
Just in North Texas alone, you have two of the largest school districts in the DFW area. You have Fort Worth ISD and then Dallas ISD now starting their superintendent search. Richardson Independent School District is beginning theirs.
Wow.
So with that being said, and that sheer number of vacancies, not just in Texas, but elsewhere across the country, you have this competitive dynamic among school districts, but also creating more competition for candidates. And what I'm seeing, just based off of my own experiences, is that candidates are dipping their toes into different pools of water. So they're casting more lines out into that, you know, the blue ocean, to see if they can, you know, make a compelling argument for themselves to serve in those respective communities wherever they choose to apply. But it is creating more competition for school boards, most definitely. And I think for us, to answer the second part of your question, how are we differentiating between candidates and understanding who really aligns the leadership profile? We do two very unique things. We're very
let me say something on that. The people I know right off the bat, the people that you're going to even take to even meet are going to be good educators for the most part, okay? But the superintendency has changed in such a public way that they have to be able to deal with the media, okay, in these crazy times. And that's, you know, it's that kind of a thing. I'm assuming they're going to be pretty good educators. You are, obviously, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So I would say of the 22 superintendent searches, all but one that we've managed and supported have been traditional candidates. By definition, they're public educators, teachers, principals, central office administrators, superintendents, et cetera. But effective communication is paramount at this stage of the game, both written and verbal. I mean, you have to be comfortable speaking in front of the camera or – In an environment similar to this one that we're visiting this morning in, so there's ways for us to ascertain how effective of a communicator are these candidates. So we do two unique things to answer the second part of your question. One, we have what is called an on-demand interview that gives every single candidate an opportunity to showcase their experience and their skill set using a device of their choice, whether it's a laptop, a desktop, a tablet, where he or she is answering pre-recorded questions to give the school board members an opportunity to hear from them, to learn from them before they choose to bring them in on a plane, train, or automobile, right? So it gives them an opportunity
to
shine.
I like that.
And it creates a level playing field because every candidate is invited to complete that on-demand interview. So it is, in theory, a guaranteed interview because when we present the candidates, it's not just enough to show the tangible artifacts, the letter of interest, the resumes, the academic transcripts, the other artifacts that he or she may provide to us. We also want to supplement that portfolio with a visual representation of who the candidates are. So that's the one guarantee. What we've done to even enhance that experience is we've now adopted a new assessment, which is referred to as the Wonderlic assessment. It's a brief cognitive, behavioral, and motivational, motivational tool, resource, an online assessment that again identifies where talent very, very closely aligns to the leadership profile. And the leadership profile is essentially the job description. It's all those bullet points that a school board and community stakeholders articulate and convey to the search firm what they're looking for in the next superintendent. So we take it a step further now. We're unique in that regard because we're the only search firm in the country that utilizes both of those tools.
Cool.
So that helps our school board partners identify talent in a way that's unique and not just the traditional pathways that they're accustomed to of looking at a resume and taking our word for it. We don't present a stable of candidates. We're not recycling candidates from one district to the other. In fact, we will make recommendations based on our practitioners on the team who feel that this candidate brings, you know, this set of values, these set of norms aligned to what you're looking for. However, this is the board's decision. We don't even participate in the interviews when a candidate is invited to interview. We're there on site, but we're simply a Sherpa at that point. We're not intervening or circumventing the decision-making. We're there to support the board, the superintendent candidates, but we're out in the bullpen just hanging out while they interview.
It's so interesting. And again, go ahead, Maria, please go, please.
I was going to say, so did I bring the right friend to the table? Isn't James the right person at the table for this one?
He's wonderful. I love him. He's given me some great insights into all this. You did good, Maria. You're doing good, Maria. I got to ask, you know, the other challenge, this is a long-term one, and I don't actually know the answer to this one. There's always talk that we need, quote, more black males in education. Not necessarily the superintendency, but we need them as teachers to be good role models, okay? That's a common thing that we hear all the time these days. We obviously need more people of any color, okay, involved in education, particularly, you know, as we are well aware how the student population has changed. We want to reflect them and make them feel comfortable. How are we doing in terms of Latino folks coming into the profession? What's your say? Because that's where it's got to start. What do you think, Maria? How are we doing on that?
Well, I've been sitting in on a couple of meetings to actually try to work through this issue, and there's just so many variables. You know, we've got to remove some of the barriers that often our systems, you know, have traditionally had, and they could be where really the only folks of color that you see in schools that look like the students are working in our cafeterias or our bus drivers, even though they have a significant impact because they can carry, you know, a relationship on with students at the outset. What we're trying to do is oftentimes they see themselves as that's as closest to the classroom as they're going to get. And what we're trying to say is one of the barriers is not just getting into school and furthering their education, but no one wants to come out with, you know, enormous amounts of school debt. That is like they can't even fathom that. And so we're working on one of those barriers of how do we create, just like private industry does, the business sectors, they will invest in people. And so when they invest in people, then they stay and they provide, you know, for that company. What we're trying to do is also use a lot of these funds that have been coming down the pike, and we want to see those continued investments so that we can reach within our communities and say, look, here is a pathway where at the end of it, you're not looking at a pile of debt, and we're going to put support systems in place to help walk you through. Because oftentimes, I mean, I'll tell you, it took me 10 years to get my bachelor's degree because I was fumbling around without anybody holding my hand. And I don't want that for somebody else, because there are so many people that they have a straight pathway, and we need to make that straight pathway for those folks of color to be able to get into the pipeline. So just taking a look at what those barriers are, the economics of it all, you know, just – And start there. And then the other piece is, you know, it's not very attractive right now when you have these media postings of people hollering at you.
That's
people
right.
making, you know, making your, you know, your job more difficult. And I get it. You know, this is it's almost become a norm to it's okay to do that. And it's not. We're not being civil to one another. And if you're not civil to one another, you're not going to know what that other person brings or offers to the table. And we're never going to get beyond that. So we have to start in that at the classroom level so that kids want to aspire to become educators, rather than let's just get our degree, go out and make a lot of money, and let's not ever give back to our community, because you know what? The goal here is to make a lot of money. That's not our end game. And one of the things that I have found, and I try to share with everyone that will pay attention or listen to me at all, is that, you know, we just did a national survey. We had the results this past, I think it was October, that came out, where of the Latinos that we took the survey, they showed a higher empathy rate than any other ethnicity, and we need to capitalize on that. That empathy of being able to listen, collaborate, work, be able to step in somebody else's shoes is an asset and not a deficit. And so we need to be able to share that with folks. And I think that through that, we can elevate the confidence level of our kids to say, you have strength and talent, and it's not just for, you know, making money. It really is about a greater life that's the long game for us.
And if I just may say, we have to raise teacher salaries. Okay, that's what's going to draw people into. We have to do that.
It's
and I know it's not about the money.
Exactly.
Okay, and we have, if people go into education and teach for 10 years, we repay their student loans, something like that. We have to be creative about this. Okay,
Absolutely. And
it's just amazing. Maria, I don't even know the answer to this question. Do you know what percentage of educators are Latino? Do you know? Of professional educators.
You know what? I don't know offhand. The number escapes me, though, but I'll get back to you. You know why? Because it's less than 25% for sure.
Less than 25%.
I
would think it would be more less than 25%. My point being, if we want people to become superintendents, we got to get them involved in education. James, do you know? Let me ask this question. What percentage of superintendents are Latino? Do you know, James?
I don't know the actual numbers or the figures, but I do know that the percentage of Latino superintendents is on the rise. Again, just looking at my own state.
Yeah,
I mean, here locally in Texas, of the largest school systems across the state, the majority of those, with the exception of Houston ISD, which we also conducted that search here in the past year, majority are Latina.
How about in California, which is another heavily Latino? Yeah. What's the word on that? That's where you're from, Maria.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that we do, and we haven't been able to do it this year because there's been so much mobility in the last year. There's a company that actually puts all of that data. You purchase the data so that you could have those numbers. But because it's been so fluid that they haven't been able to pinpoint all of the numbers, because it's just been changing so quickly, like on the daily. We have been posting jobs more this past year than ever. I mean, we're always tweeting them out, you know, trying to just get the word out. So to James' point, I think there's an increase. Not only that, I know that, in California, there's somewhat of an increase. I mean, I was one of nine back in my day as a soup, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, now 4 years ago. But I was only, you know, it was a very small amount of female Latino superintendents. So I'm sure that is growing as well.
Right. It has to grow because we have to reflect the students we teach. Okay, and that's the way we engage them. All right, it's that simple.
Yep.
James, it's good to know you. Thank you for being here today, my friend.
Oh, likewise. Again, appreciate Maria's invitation and letting me tag along. This has been a lot of fun, and hope to meet you in person someday.
I hope so, indeed.
Puerto Rico.
Right, Puerto Rico. I'm kind of thinking about that, you know. All right, you got me going here.
James is going to be out there, right, James?
Most likely. We actually have one of our events in Puerto Rico as well, but it's not until January of 2023.
So you can go and check it out in October. There you go. So we got it made.
I go twice.
And Marie,
the challenge with that is my...
Go ahead.
My family may have my better half may have other ideas. That's my birthday weekend, so that's tough.
Well, you got to remember who's the king of the castle, and if you actually believe me on that, you're going to get into big trouble, my friend. Okay, so
yeah,
right. Not to worry about that. You guys are terrific. Thank you both. Okay, I'll be in touch shortly. All right. Thank you. Have a great day. Stay safe, both of you.
You
thank
too.
You.
Take care.
Bye bye. Okay, everybody, we got to go. That's one of my favorite guests. She's so great. Maria Armstrong, Dr. Armstrong, is the executive director of the Association of Latino Administrators and Superintendents and alasedu.org. And then James is the founder of the executive administrative education search firm JG Consulting, and they're in Dallas. Excuse me, they're in Austin. Okay, sorry, but I don't know where I got Dallas in my head. Maybe because he's a Cowboys fan. We'll archive at ace-ed.org. Our other sites are seltoday.org and teacher-retention.com. I'm Larry Jacobs. Thanks for listening.